Welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast, the number one place for dads into self-improvement, or as I like to call it, dad-provement. Guild of Dads is the epicenter of dad-provement. I'm Joe Horton, and I'm going to be your host for the next hour or so. On each episode of this podcast, I deliver to you conversations that will expand what you think is possible for you across many areas of life and give you actionable resources on a particular topic or a different perspective. I do this by speaking to fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs and ultra-athletes, professors, psychologists, anthropologists and also some ordinary dads like you doing some amazing things. It's a tough gig being a dad and none of us get a handbook for it, but it also represents a golden opportunity for personal growth. If you're anything like me, you're searching out information to be a better, more capable, competent, effective man and father. Someone your kids can look up to and live a life where you're growing, thriving and learning new things, acquiring new skills and knowledge, getting your mental health, physical health, relationships and development in optimal shape, all at the same time as showing up as the best dad you can be. That's what I call dad-provement. There are a few ways to get involved with the Guild of Dads. You can listen to this podcast first and foremost, but you can also join our Guild of Dads Facebook group and join a few thousand other dads from across the world on their own journeys of dad-provement. Inside the group, you will find some lively, thought-provoking discussion and weekly resources from me to help you improve. On today's episode, I'm joined by dad and founder of Family Law Assistance, Stephen Wade. With a large proportion of marriages ending in breakdown, many dads would experience the challenge of having to organise child contact as part and parcel of this. Steve and his team help men and women going through family breakup, but more importantly, Steve is a passionate advocate of approaching breakup with the right mindset and looking at it as an opportunity and new chapter in your life. He has personal experience of going through breakup and divorce, which makes him uniquely placed to help others going through the same. Today, we delve into both the mindset and practical steps you can take. And now to my conversation with Steve. Steve, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast, which we're actually streaming live into the Facebook group this evening. Welcome aboard, sir.
Evening.
It's good to have you here. Now, we sort of linked up on Twitter a little while back, and we were talking about, because primarily my interest is helping dads and also helping them, particularly through their relationship ups and downs, and helping kind of repair relationships that are not going to plan or kind of stumbling or faltering or on the verge of separation or divorce or whatever it's going to be. You kind of come into the kind of equation after that stage, where after separation and when divorce is taking place and all that kind of stuff. How did you kind of first get into this line of work, and what was your kind of story, so to speak?
Okay, so the simple answer is personal experience. Once upon a time I was a dad. I'd had one son. I thought I was going to get a second child. Did a 2.4 children, go to work, support the wife, traditional stuff. That's kind of what I expected, what I kind of wanted. And I was all set. My son was 3 months old. And I thought, okay, well, next couple of years, we'll probably have the second one. And then that changed when I came home one day and found my house empty, minus my then wife and then my son. It was completely landed on me at the time. Like a lot of guys, the funny thing was, at the time, it seemed to me utterly, utterly out of the blue. No warning signs whatsoever. Although, of course, it's probably your side of stuff. There were lots of warning signs there. Mm-hmm. I was just doing what a lot of guys do and not seeing them. What followed basically was a 5-year court case to save my son's life. It was pretty much the most hostile as you can possibly get. You know, allegations of, child abuse, domestic abuse, that sort of thing. And halfway through the case, my son was moved from Bedford, where we were living, to rural Wales, completely out of the blue. Well, that was completely out of the blue. I found in the court hearing. So I followed. I represented myself in court, and I was then now living in rural Wales, where I am now. I'm actually in the Brecon Beacons, right in the mountains. I see mountains from my bedroom window. Complete mind blown culture shock from an Essex boy that's used to growing up the Langdon Hills being the highest hills in the area. But you know what? I'd gone through the corporate thing. I'd worked for places like Barclaycard. I'd worked in the City of London. Mm-hmm. I was living in Bedford at the time. And when I moved to rural Wales, there wasn't much in the line of work when it comes to stuff like IT support, which is what I did. I did a couple of permanent jobs, got made redundant. I by then met my now wife, who happened to be a qualified paralegal, and she'd helped me in my court case with my son. I'd got a great result out of that. 40% of the time he's with me. And I volunteered at a parenting charity. I helped out a parenting charity. I spent so much time helping people, I started taking holiday off to help people in court. And then I reached a point when I decided that I was going to do it on a full-time basis. Of course, I hesitated. Do I do this? If I turn into a business, I'm going to have to charge people, which, of course, was something I didn't want to do. But I rationalized that if I did charge, I could help more people and put out free content. So that's my story in a nutshell.
Mm. And one of the things that I noticed quite a lot, Steve, and this is kind of one of the, I'm going to sort of kind of rewind a little bit. A lot of the guys that kind of I speak to, and a lot of the guys that are in marriages which maybe are not going to plan, or they're not been able to communicate effectively with their wives, or it might be a sexless marriage, or their needs aren't being met, or whatever it's going to be. There seems to be a culture now whereby, and I know you've touched upon this in some of your content that I've seen, in terms of guys' mindsets and their expectations versus what is actually the reality of the situation. What I find with a lot of the guys that I work with, you know, and this is often before they've got to the stage of getting divorced or getting separated or whatever, they're almost frightened to kind of state their needs in a relationship or say anything that is kind of going to upset the apple cart, or say anything that is going to run the risk of them feeling the wrath of their wives. And I wonder how much of this is because of the fact that in a lot of guys' minds, they're thinking that actually, if they cause conflict in their relationship, or if they stand up and say what their needs are and communicate their needs, that there is a real risk that if their wife doesn't like what they've got to say, and that she decides she doesn't want to be in the relationship anymore, that if it goes through a family court, or if it goes through divorce or separation, they're going to come off significantly worse, both financially and in terms of seeing their kids. And so I think there is this, I just get the feeling there's this culture of fear where guys don't want to stand up and say things within their relationship because they are so fearful of how kind of, or their perception is that men are going to be treated kind of quite badly if the whole, the kind of house of cards falls down, if you like, you know? And I just wonder whether, I know you noticed that kind of post-separation and post-divorce in the guys you work with, but it just seems to me like a theme that seems to run throughout relationships that were on the rocks, but also relationships that have kind of actually broken down completely, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of received wisdom about relationships and raising children and being a dad and that sort of stuff. And that's why, you know, sometimes you'll see me asking questions which are actually perhaps seem a bit provocative, because, you know, received wisdom, if you're not going to question why things come up, you're going to be doomed by it. I mean, like I say, at the start, I was one of those guys. I thought, I was that guy. You know, I took it without question that my now ex-wife was going to be the primary carer of my son, and I was going to go out and do the 9-to-5 and work and provide and that sort of stuff. And you know what? With the benefit of hindsight, I always think, okay, work backwards from where I am. So obviously, I'm a father, like a lot of dads. I'm a non-primary carer, as they would have it. And then my son's mum cares for him 60% of the time. She's a primary carer. So that happened because the courts tend to like to keep things as they are before a relationship ends. So that's why most fathers are non-primary carers by the time they get to a divorce. But if you trace back from there, why are they non-primary carers? It's because they kind of expect to be the breadwinners. That's where that comes from. Where does that come from? Where does that expectation come from? You know, I keep seeing that thing on that Twitter sort of thing, the masculine urge to whatever, yeah? The masculine urge to provide for your wife and kids. That's where it comes from, I think. You know what? I was brought up, you know, to be the dad that went out and worked and provided. And I expected my wife to care for my son. And, you know, me, I wanted to do that. You know, that, whether it's hardwired social, cultural, whatever. I kind of expected to do that. I think I also expected, though, to be treated as an equal parent. Mm-hmm. And that was by the time that happens, I realized that I was sorely mistaken. Thinking back with my marriage with my ex-wife, if I'd have said to her, look, I want us both to care for our son equally, and I both want us to contribute financially, she would have totally not gone for that at any step of the way. I remember saying to me, you go out to work and I care for the babies. And me being the chest thumping male, thought, yeah, fine, that's what I'll do. And I thought it was only half tongue in cheek. It wasn't. That's where her expectations were. And that expectation continued after we separated. I don't know how guys could change this, to be honest, Joe. Maybe the thing would be to early on in the relationship to actually make it clear to any partner that if they have kids that they're going to have a certain role as a parent and they're going to stick to it. The bottom line is the sad issue is that if you're a dad and you separate from your child's mum, chances are you're going to be on the back foot. That's just the way it is. I think back to my situation and what could I have done differently with my son's concern? And I've only ever come up with one solution to that. And that would have been to have left with my son before she did. Now, that's an awful proposition. It's something I would have never considered. And even with the benefit of hindsight, I wouldn't have done, because it wouldn't have been in his best interests. I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have had the conscience to do that. But a lot of guys, when their relationships are breaking up, they know that they're going to end up on the back foot, especially where their kids' concerns. And I suspect it's one of the reasons that men tend to stay in marriages that aren't happy compared to women. They've got so much more to lose. And, never mind quantum of time with the children. When it comes to the financial side of stuff, look at the Matrimonial Causes Act and dividing of assets. Money follows the children. So if you've got the children, you are going to get the lion's share of any assets. The children, if you're going to be a horrible cynic, are a huge bargaining chip. And sadly, guys, you're going to be on the losing end of it. So I think that's why tend to be a lot more fearful of a marriage breaking up than a woman. Plus the fact, of course, the first thing that a guy does when the marriage breaks up, gets together, he dumps all his mates. Women keep their social circle, whereas the guy sits on his own. So I think men tend to have a lot more to lose from a marriage than a woman.
Yeah, and it's interesting because what the trend that I kind of notice, and this is kind of what I, as you know, this is kind of what I try and unravel with guys when stuff hits the rocks, is this idea that, so I think a lot of people believe that when you get married, you kind of marriage is defined as a union of two people. It's not defined, it's not a merging of two people together. And I think, the modern world has created this kind of misinterpretation of marriage, and you hear people talking about soulmates and all this kind of stuff, and that when you get into marriage you kind of sacrifice everything at the altar of marriage and you merge into one sort of thing. And the problem that I find with a lot of guys is that they do that, and like you say, they stop seeing their mates, they stop doing the things that they enjoy doing, their hobbies, and kind of everything goes on kind of hold, and it gets parked in order to make this institution and make this thing work. But what they forget is that it is a union, it's not emerging. So a union is two individuals, two autonomous people that are kind of joining together to make something work. But I think the problem is for a lot of men, and also women, I think as well, they end up losing themselves in the process. So they start off as two individuals and then they get further and further lost. And then you get a period of time down the line, they're like, actually, I don't even know who I am anymore. I've got no interests, I've got no friends. I've got nothing at all outside of the marriage. Everything revolves around the marriage. And then, like you say, when stuff hits the rocks, they're very isolated because they've not really got any infrastructure to support them, because the guys that they would have been going out with, maybe having a beer or whatever together and, catching up and, confiding in them. And this is how, brotherhood comes back into this whole equation. That kind of framework has disappeared. So they're facing down this, the thing that they've worked so hard to make work, falling apart, trying harder and harder and harder to make it work whilst it's falling apart. And then having this kind of thought in their mind as to, well, I'm on a course for hiding to nothing anyway. So it's kind of like a foregone, it's just such a disempowering and you know, to use the word masculine, such an emasculating experience that it's just like, there's nothing worse that can happen to a guy, really, is there? So,
no, I mean, you know, drawing from personal experience, I remember, you know, a time, you know, when my, you know, I was going through the divorce and I was going through the court case, and I remember thinking, well, that's my purpose for existing done. I felt like a piece of redundant machinery. You might as well put the big sheet over my head. And, you know, what only really helped me get over that was when I realised that, you know, that I had a really very clear goal where my son was concerned. And that was the something which I managed to drag myself out of that hole. But for a long time, I thought, a failure as a husband, a failure as a father. You know, all of my life has been building up to this moment and I fucked it up.
Yeah, so there's that deep sense of kind of failure that goes through your mind, and that you're almost having to start from kind of ground zero again and start from scratch again. And what does this, you know, what does this mean? All my plans for the future were going to be X, Y, Z, and now they're A, B, C. What the hell is, just like, it's kind of throwing like all the chips up in the air and seeing where they fall almost. And yeah, it just sounds like I mean, I've got friends that have been through it, and I've seen, you know, I've seen the kind of damage it's done to them. And I know what the social, speaking to people, experts on suicide and mental health, I know that a lot of guys that go through it actually don't live to tell the tale either. So there is a, you know, as bad as it is for some guys, for other guys, they don't actually get out the other end. They actually,
no,
it ends up becoming too much.
And I know of 3 suicides so far off the back of this since I've been involved in this. You know, 2 people were, you know, one of them was a client, someone we were in touch with. And the third one, well, he committed suicide. He made the national press. I remember speaking to the guy. I was actually on holiday in Spain, and he phoned me up desperate, and I gave him advice. And a few months later, he killed himself. No, it made the national press. And no, it doesn't get much worse than that. We've got 2 kids here who have grown up, their dad's dead, quite possibly blaming mum for it, you know, rightly or wrongly. And what a mess. You know, what an awful bloody mess for everyone concerned.
Yeah. And the thing is as well, is it's kind of, you know, I would imagine in a lot of cases as well, it's totally avoidable, provided you keep within the realms of being civil and being reasonable about stuff. And this word reasonable, I know, is going to come up in this conversation. Being a former legal trainee, I know that reasonable is something that is going to, it's definitely going to come up in this conversation. Steve, if you're a guy that's kind of like, you've just separated from your wife, and, you know, things have, you know, separation isn't always the end. Sometimes it ends up as a reset, as we've discussed in the past. But in the immediate aftermath, and you've got all this stuff going through your head, you may all be kipping on a mate's sofa, or, you know, or kipping with some relatives, or even before that, it could be the case that you're kind of separated but living within the same house. What are the sort of kind of practical things that you can kind of begin? Because I'm going to try and approach tonight's conversation in terms of actually the kind of practical side of things, but also the kind of mindset kind of things, if that makes any sense, because I think 2 are very important. And I know the mindset side of breakup is the thing that you're kind of really passionate about, and really beginning to kind of raise the mindset levels of guys going into this so that they're not in that mindset that they're on a kind of hiding to nothing. So in terms of separation, what is happening in that kind of that early stages of things, and what do guys need to watch out for, both from a mindset and a, say, structural, practical side of things?
Okay, well, first thing is you need to be whiter than white at all times. You know, it's amazing how a stupid little argument can turn into a really complex legal one. You know what? That silly argument you might have could well end up with you end up getting arrested and a non-molestation order made against you, and it's used against you in court. So that's a really, really practical solution. It is to stay whiter than white at all times and not be provoked under any circumstances. You know, I would say from a mindset point of view, it's worth remembering that you're responsible for your own words and your actions completely. In the same way that your ex-partner is completely responsible for her own words and actions. You know, I was provoked. It's not an argument you're ever going to win with the police or the court, with anyone else. you know what, this might sound, you know, disempowering, that you feel that you, you know, you can be poked and poked and poked, you won't react, but you can see it as empowering, because it means you're, you know, that you've got the agency to deal with your own issues, your own behavior and your own words. It's actually a good thing. You know what, you can, you know, you can be completely empowered when you own your shit. It's as simple as that. That's a really, really good practical solution. If you're, you know, I would also say keep any kind of communication as neutral and business-like as possible. If it's not related to the children, or the divorce, don't get involved. You know, don't have long discussions, don't have long arguments. You're not going to get anywhere with this sort of stuff. That's something else that happens, is that people get into arguments that turn stupid. Another one, really practical solution. If you're still in the same house, stop sleeping with her. It's as simple as that. I have known guys to have done that they're with the ex-partner, and you know how things go sometimes. They'll be with the ex-partner, and things might be getting better for a little while. And then she's decided that she didn't consent to it. And I've known guys who've been done for rape for that sort of stuff, or assault. It's a really harsh one. In fact, you know, I know one guy, and you know, a few guys, that the standard solution here is that you move into a spare room. If you're going to be in the same house, you move into a spare room. You actually put a lock on the door and you turn into a bedroom and you stay in it as much as possible and keep contact to an absolute minimum. Now, do you know what, Joe? I'll get some blowback from this, because people say, well, you know what, when a couple splits up, he's got to move out, which is the standard thing. I think I might even put it in the Guild of Dads group, you know, who moves out when a couple breaks up. And it's pretty much always the guy. And it's, in fact, you know, on another group, I posted the same thing, and I got an awful lot of blowback from that same, pretty much. That's disgusting, why you're even asking that. But look, receive wisdom. There's a reason you don't move out, especially if they're children. And that's because you've abandoned the matrimonial home. It's as simple as that. I've known people to actually use the technique where they stay in a spare room, and it's a strong negotiating position. They say, look, I'm happy to move out, but we need to make arrangements for the children and the finances, and else we'll move out. It kind of motivates people. When you're gone, what's the motivation? Now, let's face it, your ex wants you out, and she wants the house. You've moved out, you've done it in one easy step. Now, do you know, I'm not going to defend this as something easy or as nice, but we're talking hard bullshit here. It's as simple as that. It's a tactic. Remember I said before that you need to be white and in white every step of the way. This is a big thing. I know a guy that managed it for 3 years. He actually moved. He's in the spare room. His ex-wife would not agree to any kind of contact with the children. And he made it clear at every point that he was happy to agree to move out when he could agree on a shared parent arrangement. He got it in the end. He stayed there for 3 years and he got it. It would have been easier for him to have done what a lot of guys do, some of them that come to us, move out, the ex has changed the locks, got a non-molestation order against him, stopped him seeing the kids, she's going to drag her through the finances, he's paying for the mortgage, and he's back on his mum and dad's sofa, on the back foot from the off.
And why do you think that is? Do you think it's kind of like guys, backing up a little bit, you know, I think the important thing to understand is, and you may, one of the things when you sort of say about kind of actually separating, but remaining in the house and being white to the white and being civil, I think there is this, it seems that it's necessary to make that distinction in your mind, that line in the sand to say, actually, we're not together anymore. So I don't have to do all the things for you that, okay, I can be civil and I can be well-mannered, but I don't need to do all the things for you that I used to do for you when we were married, and this is now, because we are separated and moving towards divorce, this is going to become a lot more kind of business-like. And it's actually the art of actually separating your emotion from the actual structural and the factual side of the fact that you've actually separated. And I think that, like, one of the things that I read a really fantastic book, and I've interviewed the author, Andrew G. Marshall, and it's called I Love You, But I'm Not in Love with You. And he talks about this notion that a lot of guys as well, when they separate, they end up just chasing their wives, begging for forgiveness, crying, doing all this stuff, do anything to get her back. But the problem is that ends up pushing them further and further away. And I think, again, this combined with that kind of that polite sort of chivalrous way of saying, oh, don't worry, I'll move out of the house. It's stuff that's kind of counterintuitive that's working against guys. In actual fact, they need to do the opposite. So stay in the house, and also actually, rather than kind of doing all this kind of creeping and crawling and begging and whining and crying to get her back, actually make that mental separation from actually being with her anymore, you know? But it's counterintuitive to a lot of guys, isn't it?
I think a lot of guys think that men and women are very, very similar. And of course there are similarities, but there are also crucial differences. And I think a lot of guys think, well, if I'm nice, then they think that's enough. Being the nice guy. Hey, I've been a nice guy. You know, and I can tell you it didn't work. I mean, if you're watching this and you're going through this, I'll tell you what happened to me. After my now ex-wife moved out, I started doing a DIY around the house. I started doing the house up. I started, okay, I'm not going to put under any pressure. I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be as nice as I can, but do the house up, wait for it to come back, pay the bills. It didn't. And of course, it never worked. I realized that she wasn't going to come back. And as you say, a lot of the stuff you say is counterintuitive, this sort of stuff. I don't think, in my case, she was going to come back. But the lesson I learned from there, that being nice didn't work.
Yeah. And what, in terms of like, when once you've got to the kind of point where you're beginning to think about, you know, getting child contact arrangements and stuff sorted out, how do you begin to kind of look at that? Because I know a lot of guys think, yeah, I want my kids, but they don't think about the actual kind of ramifications of actually practically how much they can see of their kids. And they just like, I want 50-50, or I want full custody of my kids. And they're just like, but they don't think through what they can actually practically do. And then what can happen is that they end up agreeing to something that they're really going to struggle to actually keep up with.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there's the actual legal side of stuff. A lot of guys will come in shouting the odds about wanting the kids 50-50 because it's their right. The courts don't work like that. In fact, if you give it a nice big number, 50-50, the court's going to think you're more concerned with your rights than the best interests of your children. That's the first factor. So I would say to any guy that says, I want to see my kids, but I'm not sure what to do, I'd say, you're their dad. You're capable of acting in their best interests, regardless of what anyone says, regardless of society, the courts, your ex, anyone else. You're capable of deciding what's the best for your children. So you decide what's in the best interest of your children. That's a really, really fundamental one. The next thing is, like you say, what can you manage? Now, I know guys that have actually scaled down their hours so that they can be around for their children more than they would have been otherwise. But I would ask you a really simple question. If your children were with you a certain amount of time before you separated, why would that change afterwards? If it was in your kids' best interest to see you 50-50 before your relationship ended, how has things changed afterwards? That's the sort of thing the court's going to ask as well. It's something that dads should be asking whether they're separated or not. What is in the best interest of their children? You know, do I need to go and be the breadwinner and not available for the kids, 99% of the time? Or do I need to be around? And it's a balance that dads need to find, whether they're separated or not. That's a big consideration that they need to bear in mind. Now, forget what the ex is going to say, what the court's going to say, what society says, whether you're going to be there every other weekend and tea time on a Wednesday, Dad. What do you feel is in the best interest of the children? That's the first question I'll ask people. Is this, once again, it's a question when people will say to me, well, what's reasonable contact? And so, as you said before, reasonable, you decide. Reasonable is what you convince the judge is reasonable.
I'm just going to jump into the conversation quickly. I'm pretty excited to announce that I've just started a new membership brotherhood exclusively for dads called the Dad Improvement Club. If you're a dad into self-improvement and you want to get the accountability, camaraderie and resources of being amongst others on your dad improvement journey, then this is for you. Regular Zoom calls, monthly topics, deep dive trainings, accountability and a system of self-improvement built in will see you beginning to really thrive in multiple areas across your life and develop more purpose, resiliency, and confidence. Right now, I have a lifetime member offer going, so you can get in for the insane one-off price of £23, but spaces are limited and going fast. To find out more, drop me an email, joe@guildofdads.com.
gildofdads.com. That's joe@gildofdads.com. And I'll wish you some information over on the Dadproofment Club.
Mm. Mm. And in terms of like actually the legislation around children, and I'm going to touch upon this, the Children Act 1989, and you're going to correct me if I'm completely wrong on this because I'm a bit rusty on this. The child is paramount, and everything revolves around the interest of the child. And this is, again, a really kind of point that I want to kind of drill down into with you, because, again, a lot of the kind of phraseology that parents use is, I'm entitled to this, or I want this, or why should she have that, and whatever. And the problem is it becomes about these two warring parties rather than the little people that are actually involved with this. And I know that, you know, I've been in front of, and I've been in front of a judge before with a client in my younger days, and I've had to kind of calm the client down because they're getting really irate and she's really getting under their skin. She's really pushing all their buttons and she's really pissing them off. And I had to say to them, look, you've got a choice. You can either walk into this courtroom as the irate, annoyed, stroppy, angry dad, or you can walk into this courtroom and you can be the reasonable guy that's acting in the interest of his child, and that you want what's best for your child, and that you're calm, you're relaxed, you're composed. And I know that you're that guy, but she's riling you up and she's winding you up. And the worst version of you is going to come out in front of the judge. And the judge isn't stupid. They can see who's winding who up. And people sort of think of the kind of judiciary as these stupid old guys and whatever, but they're seeing these cases day in, day out. So, you know, they can read between the lines. And I think people need to almost, I think, trust themselves to come across as who they are, but also trust the court to see their partner's true colors. Cause it comes, I've seen it before where I've been in a court and you can see the wife rolling her eyes and sneering, and, you know, you can tell by the body language and that. And the judge is looking at them, or the magistrate is looking at them, they're just thinking, you can see their yeah. disdain for the mother just because of how she's acting in the courtroom, you know?
Yeah, I always say that if your ex is saying that you're an angry twat, you can prove her wrong by not behaving like an angry twat in court. Hmm. Yeah, that's a good way. You know, why, you know, if you're gonna get pissed off and aggressive when your ex calls you aggressive in court, you're showing her job, you're doing her job for her. If, you know, if she's really a liar, you can prove her wrong in this. But as you say, it's a paramountcy principle. It's about the best interest of the child. And as well as behaviour, language is absolutely key here. So, I mean, one of the things that courts will often pick up on is if you use the word my child as opposed to our child. You know, look, language is important. And you know what? It belies your underlying attitude to it. Everything should be framed in terms of the child. So, you know what? You won't say, go into court and say, my ex has stopped me seeing the kids. You'd say, you say that the ex is denying the child a relationship with their father and the wider paternal family as well. Everything from the child's point of view, because you've got no right to a relationship with your kids. You've got no right to see your kids. Your kids have got a right to see you. It's called the Children Act and not the Parent Act for a reason. So language is very, very important with this sort of stuff. And everything should be framed in terms of the children. It can inform your whole belief thing. So one of the things that often comes up will be, where you'll get a mum and dad that are divorced, and the mum will say, well, he can't come and see you this weekend because he's got a birthday party. And that dad suddenly feels massively on the back foot because he's going to start shouting the odds about his right to see the kids on his weekend, or is he going to forego seeing his kid on a birthday? Look at it from a child's point of view. The child wants to go to the damn birthday party. The solution here is obvious. So I would advise my client, father, to say, that's absolutely brilliant. Give me the details of the party and I'll make sure they get there. Mm-hmm. And that way the child gets to go to the party. The child gets to see that dad is involved with their friends, and the court order gets stuck to. Often in that sort of case, so mum will decide that she has to take the kid to the party on dad's weekend, but that's mum's issue, not yours. But that's the way that if you actually do everything informed from the child's point of view, things get a lot simpler and you feel like you're less in a dilemma each time.
Yeah, what's in their best interest rather than what, she's changed the plans and I'm really annoyed about it and whatever and stuff. And, you know, however, in however many years' time. The other thing as well is how much you think a lot of this puts you in good stead as well for the future. Because like I've commented on guys who are getting really kind of irate about, you know, their ex-partner's behavior and stuff. But there's been cases in our group and stuff where guys have mentioned this stuff. And one of the things I often say as well is, look, when you're at some point, your kids are going to be in their teens or in their early, you know, in early adulthood and stuff. Do you want to have an ongoing relationship with them? And do you want to be that dad that they can look to when they're older and realize that dad did everything in their best interest, was reasonable, kind. And even though mum and dad split up, and mum was a bit of a, you know, I'm making a generalization here, but mum was being difficult. Dad still took it on the chin and still turned up every week and still took me to the cinema and went fishing with me and did whatever and stuff. Do you want to be that guy? Or do you want to be the guy that was at the end of the garden giving mum evils and shouting and arguing with you? Do you know what I mean? So there is also I think there is also a legacy to how you deal with the early days in terms of how your relationship will pan out with your children further down the line as well, Steve. I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Like I said before, you're always 100% responsible for your words and actions, as is your ex. She's 100% responsible for her words and actions. Your children are going to see how you act. They're going to see how your ex acts. And eventually they're going to come to their own judgment. You know, it might be when they're little, they're going to see that mum hates dad or dad hates mum. But, you know, as they're going to get older, they're going to see things. And ultimately, they're going to make their own decisions about this. And that's not, I'm not saying by any way it means, and I'm massively against this. People say, well, I'm going to show them all the paperwork when the kids grow up. You don't need to do that. The kids will see that if you're a decent parent, the kids will realise that sort of stuff. You don't need to say anything. You just need to be a good parent. And, you know, as you say, there's a legacy there. How you act and how you say over the years is ultimately going to be your legacy.
In terms of like the kind of practical side of, you know, court applications and stuff, guys often feel that they need to be represented by a lawyer, or they need to be, you know, they need to have the top legal team and throw thousands of pounds of cash at it in order to kind of get the result they want. How much of that is kind of true? I mean, and how much of it is, you know, again, in my experience, I've seen people represent themselves. And in actual fact, some judges might get a bit irked by the fact that they might not have got the form that they're meant to be getting in on time, or they've kind of missed some of the nuances in the legalities. But in the main, most kind of district judges, I think, are quite reasonable, provided you kind of turn up and have your kind of ducks in order to a reasonable degree, you know. And this is something that kind of psychs guys out quite a lot as well, I think. The idea that I've actually got to pay thousands of pounds for legal representation because there's no way that I can do it myself, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was about 4 or 5 years ago, I went to a conference. One of the speakers was the then president of the family division, Sir James Mumby. And he said that family courts are rapidly becoming lawyer-free zones. And it's true. There's an awful lot of hearings where there are people representing themselves now, and the courts are now reconciled to the facts. I find most judges to be actually pretty damn good these days. They're getting better, especially the younger generation. Mm-hmm. They tend to be very pragmatic. They, like as you said before, they can see if someone's been a dick or not. They know they're looking for a solution here. What they want more than anything else is you to get with your ex, come up with a solution and bugger off. Now, which is what normal people do with parents. They work together in their kids' best interests. Do you know what? People go for the traditional legal route because, quite frankly, it can be scary. And let's be honest, you know, if you're faced with a hostile solicitor, you probably want to avoid having to deal with them directly. But you know what? After a while, representing yourself, you realize that's not so bad. In fact, I think I did a post today. What used to scare me was the legal letters.
I saw that.
There I was in Bedford, and there was another bloody letter from my ex's solicitor. I'd open the letter and I'd be absolutely shitting myself, really fearful of the contents of the letter. And I remember I had this revelation one day. I looked at the letter and thought, that's just what she says. It's just dressed up in legal language in the letterhead at the top of it. And I remember laughing at the letter, going, just putting it aside and not being bothered. And I had that epiphany and realised it's not nice to actually see these legal letters. It's not nice to see court orders recording the stuff or what people think, stuff that you know isn't nice, isn't true, isn't fair, isn't right. But when you realise that it's just the process and the only bit of paper that ever matters is the court order made by the judge, life gets a lot easier. It's something I always say to my clients and people, you know, you don't need to worry about what anyone says other than the judge. You know, of course, some solicitors are going to try intimidating, bullying, suggesting, insinuating. They're just doing their job. But the thing is to realise at the end of the day, the only person you ever need to convince is the judge. Once you do that, then your focus can get very laser-like.
And the thing is as well is I think the culture within the family courts, you know, I know it's not perfect, but there were a number of changes came in a while back in terms of particularly in financial cases, not being able to take it to court until you'd gone through a course of mediation. And so there have been attempts to kind of take the sting out of it. And I know that I don't think it's called the same anymore. It used to be the Solicitors Family Law Association, but there has been attempts to actually kind of make family law a lot more conciliatory and a lot less kind of aggressive. And there are bodies for solicitors, but not all solicitors sign up to those bodies, I know, and some still go for the old-fashioned jugular approach sort of thing. But I think there has been steps in the last little while to at least try and kind of make it a bit more conciliatory. One thing that, you know, guys that are watching this video or listening to it might not realize, a lot of family proceedings as well, they're not in like an open courtroom in terms of, you know, what you'd see on kind of, I don't know, I'm going to sound really old fashioned here, like Murder, She Wrote or something like that. You know, then it's not like an old fashioned courtroom. It's in a judge's chambers, which is essentially three people sitting around a table with a judge at the end. So it's a lot more informal than people kind of think as well, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a big office. You know, no one's wearing wigs, no one's wearing gowns. Actually, you might get the ushers wearing gowns, but that's it. But the judges, you know, judge is just going to be wearing a suit. You know, there's going to be a big crest behind them, the royal crest. But as you say, it's a collection of desks, and it is it's a civil court. They understand that it's actually an unnatural and intimidating environment for people, and most of the people there are pretty nice. Most judges are actually nice enough people. People say to me sometimes, oh my God, what do I call a judge? Do I know? All the time, I say, look, common courtesy is a way forward here. The judge is understanding you're nervous. If you call the judge sir and say please and thank you and you don't interrupt and you're civil, no one's going to give you a problem. If anything, the judge is going to say to you, if you're representing yourself, look, we understand, that you're not a legal professional. So we're going to explain things to you. They actually explain things, a lot of the stuff, and they ask if you understand what's going on and if you've got any questions. I would say that 90% of the judges actually really good people. There are no gavels either. You say Murder, She Wrote, there are no gavels either. Never been a thing in British courts.
Yeah. It's really funny, the preconceptions that you do have. And I had them when I first set foot into a courtroom, and I was like, what? Why is there just like a table here and whatever? And what's even weirder is when you go up to like the High Court in London, and it's exactly the same setup. It's just a bigger office and an older desk, essentially, with a more experienced judge sitting on the end of the table. Yeah, but that's quite weird as well.
The judges can actually be, they can be, it's obviously a very serious subject, but the judges can actually be quite humorous. And they're quite friendly. And then some of them, most of them are just quite nice people. And I got me, I wouldn't want to be a judge. I mean, it's just the old joke, if you're a judge, you get to piss off at least 50% of the people in front of you.
Yeah, well, the thing is, at least 50% are not going to get the result they want all the time, are they? So one of the things as well that comes up, Steve, and this has come up in the group, funnily enough, the Facebook group, Guild of Dads Facebook group recently, is this, and again, I think this comes from the sort of culture of, oh, I must move out of the house. Guys don't want to be seen to be, skimping or being tight insofar as providing for their children. But there was a post recently where a guy was paying a massive, massive amount. How do you kind of navigate that? Should you just do it by agreement, or should you, it used to be the CSA, I know it's not the CSA anymore, but what is the kind of best way to kind of actually kind of get the, find find the right amount and the again, to use the legalese term, a reasonable amount that you should be paying towards your child's upbringing and stuff.
There is a calculator. There's an online calculator on the CMS calculator that actually says that. I would say my advice would be that you actually go to that and you pay the going rate. Now, you said at the start, you know, they're being seen to not be scrimping. Having been an ALP coach, my first question would be seen according to who? You know what? Everyone has got an opinion on this, yeah? I would say if you're a father and you have a financial obligation to your children, what you do is you pay the CMS calculator and you pay the going rate. You're going to need cash to spend on your children when they're with you, aren't you? If you've moved out, if you've got a separate home from your ex and you're paying every penny, how are you going to have any money to spend your children when you're with you?
Mm. Yeah.
And of course, you're going to be providing as well, because being a good father, you're going to be doing things like buying clothes and then clothes, toys, provide food for your children. You're providing. You're going to need money as well, aren't you? Mm. If you hand over every penny, you will not be able to do that. It's a balance thing here. I think once again, this comes back to what you said right at the very start, Joe. I think it's being seen as a provider. And the guy that provides the most is the guy who's hunting the biggest mammoth. It's a natural instinct. But when you're not separated, of course you're going to actually want to be able to provide for your children as much financially as possible. But when you're separated, things have changed, unfortunately. And, there are now two households instead of one. You've got a household perhaps to provide for your children, depending on the arrangement you've got. But you've also got a household for yourself to provide. Like I say, you're going to need money to take the children out and provide them when they're with you.
Okay. And my next question, and this is one that comes up a lot, and one that is kind of I used to see come up quite a lot, and I know the courts really do not like it at all, is when contact is linked to maintenance. So it's, the payment hasn't come through this month or this week or whatever it's going to be. So therefore, you're not seeing the kids. How do you guys deal with that, A, when they've just got informal arrangements, and B, if they've got a contact order in place?
Okay, well, as you say, there is no link in law between contact and finance. If it's been agreed that it's in the children's best interest to see dad 3 days a week, for example, that doesn't magically change depending on how much money he's putting in mum's bank account. It's either in their best interest or it's not. If mum is actually linking that in any way, you go down the path of the court, you attempt mediation, if appropriate, or you put an application into the court. It varies depending on what she said and what the circumstances are. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do need to pogo, stick it straight back into court for enforcement. Sometimes you do need to do mediation. It's as simple as that. There's no link. There's no excuses for it. In fact, I remember reading a few years back, there was a study in Australia that found that fathers that see their children are more likely to pay maintenance than fathers that don't.
And that tells its own story, doesn't it?
It does. It tells its own story. But yes, there is no link between contact and finance. In the same way for dads, that if you're not seeing your children because for whatever reason, including the fact your ex is denying contact, you still have a legal obligation to support them financially.
Which explains why judges get very, I've seen some very angry judges when it's been mentioned in the courtroom that this is exactly what's going on, and they really, really do not like it. And that's an understatement, isn't it, Steve?
And it comes back to you being 100% responsible for your words and actions. Yeah. What are you going to say to your kids when they grow up? No, I didn't provide you financially. That's because your mum was a bitch and she stopped contact. How would it sound differently if you say, I didn't see you. No, I didn't see you as a child. Your mum was awkward, but I always provided for you financially. That tells its own story, and it's a legacy as well. Yeah. You're responsible for your own words and actions. Your ex is responsible for hers.
Yeah. We've covered quite a lot of the... I was going to say we were going to go into mindset, and we have delved into mindset. We've gone into kind of quite a lot of the practical stuff. What do you think are some of the kind of the things that guys can actually do? Mentally, we know that this is going to take its toll on guys. What do you think are some of the practical things that guys can actually do from a from a mental standpoint to actually keep themselves on the kind of, I usually say straight and narrow, but actually really begin to kind of look after themselves and care for themselves throughout these, particularly the early days. And as you begin to get stuff arranged and you come to terms with the fact that the relationship is irretrievably broken down between yourself and the children's mother, and you're going to go your own separate ways. Does this present an opportunity for guys to actually really begin to kind of find themselves, you think, Steve?
It did for me. It was the start of my path. It wasn't just me working in the family courts. It was a real change around in life for me.
Mm.
An evaluation about what was important in life and what wasn't. And to get a bit woo-woo, what it actually meant to be a father and what the important things of being a father was. In terms of practical terms, well, for the practical approaches, it's stuff that you're going to be well familiar with, Joe. So it's going to be things like exercise is absolute bloody key. Now, I get it. If you're pissed off, if you're depressed, if you're going for this, you're probably not going to want to go and exercise. That's absolutely time you should exercise. It reminds me of the old saying about the way you should meditate 10 minutes a day. And if you haven't got the time, you should be doing it an hour a day. The same goes for exercise. even if it's just a walk, going for a walk, getting out in the outdoors into the fresh air, if there's a bit in there, if you've got the opportunity to go for a walk somewhere in nature, in a park, or if you're in the middle of nowhere like me in the woods, going for a walk is a great way of clearing your head and getting the exercise. Now, that can't be underestimated. It also, I think it's very effective when it comes to dealing with depression as well, which is a factor that many fathers will deal with this. How I framed that when I went through it, I need to be fighting fit for my son. I need to be in best condition as possible. I actually have an old exercise bike. I remember at the time, do you remember that Battlestar Galactica series years back?
Yeah.
I was absolutely addicted to that when I was going through this divorce thing. But I had that all of it on DVD, but I'd only let myself watch them when I was pedaling on the exercise bike. So I used to pedal. Until I virtually fell off the bloody thing. And it gave me the exercise. It wore me out. It kept my mind occupied. And I slept well at night, which is another key thing. Sleep is an absolute key thing.
Yeah.
Looking after yourself in terms of food is absolutely key as well. Enjoy your food. You know what? If you don't know how to cook, now is a great opportunity if you're going for it. Especially if you're these guys who's relied on your ex to cook. Cooking, looking after yourself in terms of food, it's a great thing to do. Food, it touches so many senses and it can lift your mood. Me, a good curry can make a huge difference to my mood. So eat well. Next thing is, like you say, hobby, hang around with friends. You probably don't feel like that, but believe me, there's, sitting in front of the telly all day is not the way to live. No, seriously. Or watching YouTube clips. Those are the three biggies, Joe. You've probably got lots that, I know you've got lots that you do with guys on a daily basis. You talk about things like lifting, that sort of stuff,
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff is absolute sort of thing to do.
But the thing is, and we've delved into it in tonight's conversation. A lot of the work I do is kind of, it's not dissimilar to the work that you're doing around kind of the mindset of kind of putting yourself back together after a breakup or divorce. A lot of the work I'm doing is really just doing that, trying to do that before guys actually end up getting divorced and separated in the first place. So, it's one of the very sad things about the modern world right now and about relationships is there is this belief that guys need to put themselves last. And in actual fact, the completely counterintuitive thing that transforms men's lives and also the relationships with everyone is to begin to put themselves first. And when they put themselves first, then they can prioritize the things in life that are important to them. But you can't show up as a dad you want to be, whether or not your kids are living with you or not. And you can't be the person you want to be if you're neglecting your self-care, you're neglecting your physical health, you're neglecting all these things about yourself, because life becomes like an existence. Like I said at the beginning, you kind of lose yourself. And I think that one of the things I notice, particularly in terms of guys that are kind of or on second marriages and stuff, some of the guys that are on second relationships are in really, really good relationships now, because what they often do is they notice where they kind of went wrong the first time round. They take ownership of where they went wrong the first time around, which means that when they go into the second relationship, they're actually a more kind of self-actualized individual. You know, they know what they want. They know what makes them tick. They know what their interests are. They know, you know, what their boundaries are, what kind of behavior they'll tolerate and what they won't. So it's not to say that they won't compromise, but their understanding of themselves and what they need is slightly different. And I think that, you know, this is why sometimes when I work with guys that are separating or on the verge of separating, sometimes that gives guys a necessary reset on their marriage, because for the first time in however many years, they are actually focused on themselves. Yeah. And that is that becomes attractive to their partners. And they're like, oh shit, I've got that guy back that I met all these years ago. And it's just sad that it has to get to that point.
I think a good way of rationalizing it is that, no, if you're in good condition, you're in a better place to help other people.
Definitely.
You can't save the world either. You know what? No, of course, there are an endless number of people that need help with an endless number of jobs to do. But no, if you're not in good shape, you're not going to help anyone. So, which is why, no, you get back to the fundamentals, like not exercise, sleep, eating well. You do that, you're going to be much more powerful. You're going to be a lot stronger. You're going to be a lot more rational, and you're going to be a lot more level-headed when it comes to dealing with whatever life throws at you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We're coming up to the hour, Steve. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. This has been a bit of an unusual one tonight, in that this is actually broadcast live into the Facebook group, so guys can actually watch it back and stuff as well. But I'm going to put this out as a podcast as well, because I think it's a very valuable conversation to actually spread to a further audience. If people want to find out about you, the work you do, or link up with you, what is the best way to do so, Steve?
Well, you've only got to Google my business, Family Law Assistance. You can find our website at www.familylawassistance.co.uk. You'll find us. There's lots of podcasts. You'll find me all over social media. Yeah, no, you have problems shutting me up. It's simple as that. You find me there, you'll find everything else I'm doing.
Excellent, excellent. I really love what you're doing. And what kind of resonates with me the most is, I think it's very... I think it works very well with the kind of whole ethos of Guild of Dads, just simply because you're one of the first people that I've met and interacted with that have got quite a really positive outlook and attitude to kind of family breakup. Obviously, it's something that happens, but I like the fact that you are very positive about it and you're very mindset orientated about it. You're very straight talking about what works, what doesn't work, what's a waste of time, what isn't a waste of time. And it's very refreshing. I'm going to ask you one more question that I ask all people that come on the Guild of Dads podcast. And again, I don't prime anyone for this one. Steve, what is it in life that gives you meaning, sir?
Do you know, I asked you that question the other day. I said back at you, ain't it? Do you know what? I want to be that when I lay on my deathbed, I can say that I did my best. It's as simple as that.
Okay. There you go. That is the most succinct one I think I've ever had. But you were slightly prepared for that one. So, Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you this evening, as always. I really appreciate you and the work that you're doing in this particular area. And I wish you all the best with how you continue to help gents that are going through this very tumultuous time.
Thank you.
Cheers, man. If you want to find out a bit more from Steve, you can link up with him over on Twitter and find out about Family Law Assistance. Their website is www.familylawassistance.co.uk. If you enjoyed today's episode, the greatest compliment you can give me is a rating or review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Also, share with friends or relatives you think may benefit. Don't forget, join the Guild of Dads Facebook group. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.